All right, so welcome to the special members episode of Query. I'm one of the hosts, Stephen Hackett, and I'm joined, of course, by the newest host of Query, Micah Sargent.
Hello, Stephen, and hello, listeners and members. Thank you so much for being members of Relay FM and helping us make all of these awesome shows even more awesome, hopefully.
So, Micah, you've been around Relay for a while. When did you join Clockwise? Like a year, year and a half ago?
Ooh, I want to say, yeah, it's been about a year. Yeah, it might be a little bit longer than a year, but I still remember the day that I was called to take up the gauntlet from the mantle. The mantle, that's it. Thank you. Could not get there.
Clockwise isn't that hard. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Sometimes Dan will pick up the gauntlet and snap his fingers. That's a thing, right? Isn't that like, I don't know. It's Marvel. It's those movies that are out right now.
So you picked up the Clockwise stone, and now you have the Query stone.
I've got the Query stone and the Clockwise stone. I don't know what the other ones would be. Hopefully not anymore, honestly. Right now, I'm good to go with the Query and Clockwise stone.
Knock off a host of Connected or Mac Power users?
No plans for any of that. No, not now.
So you've been on Relay for a while, and you were in the tech scene before that, of course, with your work at Mobile Nations and some previous jobs we're going to talk about. But what I wanted to do today was get to know you a little bit better and let our members get to know you a little bit better. You know, one of the sort of the weird things about being a co-founder of something is I get interviewed pretty often about work or podcasting, whatever. So I feel like much of my story is out there just because of my position with the company. But I wanted to do that with you this week. So I've prepared some interview questions. I went to journalism school. So I got out my hat and I got out my notebook and a pencil. And I said, what is the who, what, when, where, and why, and how of Micah Sargent?
And nice.
We're going to inverse pyramid this thing and get into it. So
I love it. I love it. And of course, make sure you don't have any fact errors or you'll get failed out of journalism.
Right. No Oxford commas here, Casey Liss.
Oh, boy. I like the Oxford comma.
Get out. We're done. Interview over.
It's like the only thing Casey and I agree on, though.
I'm going to need someone else to interview. Someone else in here, please. Okay. So you, your day job, you work for Mobile Nations. People may not know Mobile Nations is the sort of the parent company of sites like iMore and Android Central, and they had a Palm site for a while and
Windows how did you Central.
Get,
and
yeah, when BlackBerry fans were a thing, it's a huge company, right? Like iMore is a massive site. These sites are all really big. Mobile Nations is a very powerful voice in technology journalism. What do you do for Mobile Nations? Like, is your work beyond just iMore? And how did you get started there?
My work does go beyond just writing for iMore. For a while, I served as the head of the news team. So I had like a team of writers, and they would pitch me on stories that, you know, we're breaking at the moment to do with tech. And then I would sort of get those assigned out and assign some of our other writers who may be specialized in certain areas. Occasionally do some motion graphics work, as well as podcasting for iMore. And yeah, some other sort of copy editing tasks and things like that. But the main scope of what I do is writing at iMore. .com. It's interesting the way that I got started at the company, because it runs counter to my brand, so to speak, I think. Or maybe it doesn't, if you've never heard me talk about it. But I was working at a company called Newsy. It is an online video news company. And so I was anchoring videos, producing videos, and writing videos there. And while I was there, I had reached out to Rene Ritchie of Mobile Nations and asked him if he had any need for freelance writers. I just wanted to get some more tech writing out onto the web, because at that point, I mostly was doing hosting of these videos about like late night shows that I had never seen. No, like these reality shows that I'd never seen before. I just sort of had to go in and I would perform these scripts that the writers would write and pretend like I knew which Real Housewife was fighting with which other Real Housewife and all those other kinds of shows. So I was like, you know, this is an interesting legacy to leave. Let's maybe get some more tech stuff out onto the scene. And Renee Ritchie was awesome and was like, hey, let's have you, can you cover Snapchat? And at the time I was like, yeah, I can cover Snapchat. I'm not a Snapchatter. I do have the Snapchat app and I have used Snapchat, but I wasn't like super big into it. My partner at the time, however, was a huge Snapchatter. Like he got his news from Snapchat. He used Snapchat all the time. It was great because I can sort of like tackle a problem. And, you know, so I went online and started putting together this how-to on using Snapchat. But I was able to ask him, hey, can you give this a look and make sure that I haven't left anything out?
Right.
So anyway, I sent this off to Renee with a bunch of screenshots and he's like, mother of God, I just wanted like one article about Snapchat and you've written this gigantic guide. And we actually still use that guide today. It just gets updated as we add new stuff, as Snapchat adds new stuff.
Right. And so massively redesign their application and piss everybody off.
Yes, all the time, every other day. So yeah, I had done that and then things were changing at Newsy and I felt like I was ready to move on. And so I reached out to Renee and said, hey, are you looking for anybody? And he was ready to have me like right then. And so I said, well, I got to obviously put in my goodbye time. And so I left Newsy in like, you know, a month or so and started at Mobile Nations and started doing all the things that I'm doing there now.
That's awesome. So you mentioned Newsy, and I don't have a ton of exposure to Newsy. I knew that you were there, and so we have some other friends who have worked there in the past. But what were you doing there? I mean, they do video stuff. Were you writing? Were you on camera, behind the camera?
So when I started there, I was a video producer. So I would come in the morning and we had somebody who was writing this sort of like rundown of the morning news. So they'd write this script. It was just like a transcript, essentially. They'd get somebody up in front of the prompter. That person would anchor this video news. And then what my job was to do was to take clips from different news, like mainstream news sites and elsewhere, and photos and things like that, and put them all together along with the anchor in, I used Final Cut Pro, put these all together into these little bite-sized, you know, 2 to 3 minute videos. And so for a long time, that's what I would do. I would just edit videos that morning news show, and then throughout the day, we would just have, you know, stories about whatever. It could be anything. It could be horrible world news. It could be something cool that's happened in science. It could be something in tech, etc. And then shortly after that, I started writing. So I would write these transcripts. I'd find stories online that we wanted to cover and then put together a transcript with the proper visuals and things like that. And then I would usually end up producing the stories that I wrote, but someone else would anchor them. And then I moved on to start anchoring as well. So I started, you know, going on camera and anchoring my stories and anchoring over time, you know, anchoring other people's stories as well, and still did some production. When I left there, I was the coach of new and incoming, like the person who was coaching people for on camera work. Mm-hmm. So I had people, you know, helping them figure out our sort of anchoring style and how that worked. And then I ran the tech team there. So I had a team of writers who were based in, you know, interested in tech. And so they would pitch me on stories and I'd help assign those and we'd have projects and things like that. So, yeah, and like I said, I did a stint where I was the overnight anchor for these different videos that we put together about reality TV and things like that, because we had partners who wanted recaps of these shows. So it was like, tonight I'm going to learn about these wonderful like old school antiques that people really want to buy, or the shows where they go and they like bid on storage wars. And it was all just like, I had no idea what they were, but I just had to go in and pretend like wow. I was so excited or so distraught.
It's a pretty good skill, right? Like to be able to be dropped into a situation and respond to it in a way that like makes sense for you and your audience.
Yeah, it ended up like it was a lot of fun, the challenge of it. And I think that it is helpful even now, you know, just podcasting. I mean, I sort of like to throw in a bit of improv when I can on different things. And when, you know, someone throws a question at you that you weren't expecting or goes a different way, it's helpful to sort of have that. And also, you know, when you're talking about new sponsors and things like that, just to sort of be able to go in into things where, you know, you've just got a handle on where the conversation is going to go. So it was definitely helpful in what I do now, particularly when it comes to podcasting.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And it's something that you're really good at and something that I have had to practice being good at. And I think that's one reason I enjoy doing Query with you, is that you will take something and like make a hard left turn. Like you did it when we did the Clockwise and Download membership special, which like I had to edit some zaniness out of that. But it's like, well, suddenly we're adding this new element to things that you just came up with on the spot. And it keeps things fun and exciting in a way that where I am a little more buttoned down and like, this is the best that's we have to do. I think we meet in the middle
really like,
on Query.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I really like that you and I get to sort of not, I don't think we're foils of each other, but I think that you and I complement each other well. And I also think that that's why when I had my stint doing Subnet, that it worked as well. It was sort mm-hmm. of like, it wasn't more of the same necessarily, but it was just like a little shift. So yeah. I appreciate that about you as well, that it sort of is a good balance. Yeah.
And now we're sharing that too. We're doing a thing on Subnet where we are having different people host it because I was at the end of my rope doing it 5 times a week.
Completely understandable.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about Child Micah. Okay. You were born in what, like 1999 or something?
Hold on. Let's see. 2018 minus 1999. That'd make me 19 right now. Yeah, we'll go with that. No, I was born in 92.
Okay.
I turn 26 at the end of this year. So I was a December. I'm a December baby.
I don't know if you heard that sound. I was experiencing organ failure as you were. As you were talking.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I was born in 92.
Okay.
I'm a youngster.
Okay. Where?
That's actually an interesting story, Stephen. So I was born on a spaceship. I was born in an ambulance on the highway.
Whoa.
On the way to the hospital.
Holy moly.
In a place called Hempel, Missouri. My birth certificate has me born in St. Joseph, Missouri, which is where the hospital was, and it is what I consider my hometown. But yeah, I was actually not supposed to be alive. There were all of these reasons why, like I was exposed to a bunch of like bacteria and I had to be in an incubator for a while. And the doctors were like, yeah, this little dude shouldn't really be here, but that's cool that he is. Let's make sure he gets taken care of. So I was born in an ambulance, went to the hospital and spent some time recuperating. And then, that's pretty much the story. I've lived in Missouri, California, in North Carolina, but most of my time has been spent in Missouri.
Yeah. Go Central Time Zone.
Yes. Oh, I love the Central Time Zone.
So were you a nerdy kid? Like, did you have an interest in technology and things that lit up and made noise as a kid? Or how did you discover that side of yourself?
Do you remember A Bug's Life?
I do.
So Flick was this little, for those of you who maybe don't remember, or if you never saw A Bug's Life, what are you doing? You should go watch it. But Flick was this inventor and he would make these things and he sort of was a bit of an outcast and he'd like get super proud of these inventions that he'd make and show them. And nobody was like really taking him seriously. A Bug's Life is my favorite film from childhood because I identified really well with really heavily with Flick. I was a little tinkerer and sort of the nerdy kid who in like among my family was interested in all of these things that everybody else was like, okay, you go do you. And so, yeah, like I loved to take things apart. I loved to learn how things worked. I still have that sort of germ in me, that thing that just makes, I love learning new things and then like being passionate about talking to people about those things anytime I learn something. Mm-hmm. So I would say, yeah, I certainly have always been a nerd for sure, and definitely was a nerd when I was a kid. It wasn't until, we grew up relatively, relatively impoverished. And so there wasn't a whole lot of tech to have as a younger kid. But as I got older, you know, more tech came into the house, but never any Apple stuff. And so I can remember always like wanting so badly to have a MacBook. And it went so far that I took my Dell computer and I put one of those Apple stickers over the Dell logo.
Oh,
and
no. Then that's so cute.
Downloaded one of those programs that like reskins Windows Vista as Mac OS.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a good, or I should say OS 10 at the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those were the
so
days,
definitely,
man.
Into tech, yeah. And I loved fixing things too. So anytime a sibling like, oh, this is not working, or my, you know, a family member was like, I can't get my email doing this, then they always sort of called on me. So I think that's where that sort of helping part of tech has always been something that I've enjoyed, because it's just the challenge of it. And like once I start a problem, I'm like, I gotta finish it. I gotta figure it out.
Yeah, I could see that leading to where you are now. Like, one thing you're so good at is taking something and explaining, like you talked about that Snapchat explainer. And you can only do that if you have the skills to, like, you're not actually taking apart Snapchat, but you're getting into an understanding how it works. And I'm a real believer, and I taught back in the day when I was doing like technician work, like Apple hardware, I always told the people I trained, is like, you can't explain something to a customer, or you can't explain something to somebody you're training until you really understand it forward and backwards. Mm. I really believe in that. And so I can see you as like a kid, like trying to figure out how things work and like be interested in something, and that evolving as you grow into what you do now. Like, it's the same. It's really the other side of the coin. It's the same type of thought process, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're dead on. It absolutely, like that is the base of it. It's needing to understand something at a fundamental level, because I genuinely get so much energy and joy out of seeing that look in someone's eye when they understand something. And then, like, an example of this, I'm always bragging about my grandma. I'm so proud of her. Like, she and I talk almost exclusively in Bitmoji, because she like learned how to use Bitmoji. She learned how to make her character how she wanted it. And now we almost talk exclusively in Bitmoji. But more so than that is, last time I went to visit my hometown, I was talking to her and she was talking about how she had a problem with her iPhone, and it had to do with her needing to install an update, and then I can't remember, do some setting thing. And she like went out and found it and did it all on her own. And it was just this really cool moment where in the past I had helped her work through these different things. And so she had that tool set that she needed to be able to fix the problem on her own. And she felt really good about it, because one thing with tech that always makes me so sad is when someone blames themselves, like, oh, I'm just stupid. I just don't get it. I'm, you know, this is my fault. And it's like, no, it's not your fault. Every time it is like the failing of the technology to not be as intuitive as it needs to be. And you shouldn't blame yourself. Let's get there. Let's figure out what we need to do. And then to see somebody be able to have, it's teaching a person to fish, I think, is what I love to be able to do.
Yeah, no, I think you have a good handle on what you're good at and why you're good at it. So you're a nerdy kid, checking stuff out. High school for me, at least, was when I really sort of fell into nerddom. I worked at the high school newspaper, met the Mac for the first time, and really, like, I can draw a pretty straight line from like my sophomore year of high school to where I am today. Okay. Like, podcasting wasn't a thing then really, but the idea of like using technology to make things that people enjoy, that's where I discovered it. So like, did you have a moment like that? I think for a lot of people it is like maybe high school or college. Like, did you have a clear moment somewhere in your education where you thought, this is the road I want to go down?
So I originally thought that I was going to go, well, I of course, everybody has a bunch of different ideas, but the one that I was pretty convinced was that I was going to go into advertising, because I did graphic design. I did freelance graphic design in high school, and I still do very much care about all sorts of graphic design stuff. I mean, I can go on about kerning and specific typefaces for specific things and how it hurts me every time I open up one of your spreadsheets and there's Comic Sans somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's beside the point. So I was pretty convinced I was going to do that, and it actually wasn't until I started working at Newsy that I realized I had this. I think it's one of those things where you sort of have the undertow of this that just was always there, but it took something to sort of realize that. And so when I started working there, I realized that, you know, the writing and the voice work and all of that kind of stuff was a possibility for me, because I had quite a few different hobbies and interests in high schools. I ran a cake decorating business, and I did a little web design business as well. And then, like I said, freelance graphic design, and, you know, a bunch of school stuff. And so my hobbies and interests were sort of all over the place. But the thing that definitely was an undertow was my interest in tech. And I guess I just always saw that sort of, when I was in high school, at least, as, well, being interested in tech means buying technology that you really like, and then also like helping people who need help with it. But I hadn't considered how that could become a job. And so I think me, like high school me, would go, holy cow, this is what you're doing. Like, you get to do these things. And something that I guess I had never really thought about at the time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think for a long time, being interested in technology was defined by purchasing, right? If you think about like the personal computer revolution, that's where a lot of people interacted with a computer for the first time, and you only bought it because you were an enthusiast. Like, maybe you bought it because your dad needed it for business, but like, there was a period of time where people bought things because they were interested in them, as opposed to now where like, most people, the vast majority of consumers, have some internet-connected device. You know, for a lot of people, it's just a phone. But it's gone from something that enthusiasts had as like sort of almost the default for a lot of people. And I think as that changes, what it means to be interested in it changes, right? It's like the car, wow, right? You had people, at first, cars only went to super wealthy people. And then as they became more mainstream, you had like the hot rodders, like people who are like, well, everyone's got a car now, but I want to like turn one into a race car, into some sort of hot rod. And you have enthusiast communities grow out of technology or whatever it is becoming more mainstream. So I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, both you and I have that sort of a similar background, like journalism, graphic design, and I think it serves us both well now. Like I do not consider myself a reporter. And I'm curious if you consider yourself one, but I do feel like I do work in a journalistic fashion. Like, I am an opinion. I publish opinion, right? I'm a, you know, what you would call a columnist if you worked in sort of the newspaper land, or I'm not a going out and breaking the story, and I can do that. And I have done that on my site and on podcasts in the past, and I'll continue to do that as things come up. But now it's like a much messier definition. Like, so do you consider yourself like a reporter in the traditional sense, or like, how would you define yourself within the context of like a journalistic background?
Yeah. So for me, I view that title as a badge. I feel like my 4 years, especially at Newsy, my 4 years at Newsy, covering horrible things like shootings and, you know, basically covering all sorts of all sorts of news and writing those stories and getting that out there and, you know, talking about breaking news and when airplanes go down and we're looking, whatever that one flight was that went missing and all that kind of stuff. Those were my sort of in the midst of it journalistic periods. And now I certainly, I wouldn't say that I'm like an active journalist, if that makes sense. I still consider myself a journalist, and sort of how you talked about the way that you approach things is with journalistic integrity and with journalistic techniques, and all of those principles are still very important to me. But the job that I do, like at Mobile Nations, I am a writer and an editor and producer. I would not necessarily say that I am a journalist at Mobile Nations, if that makes sense. But frankly, in a lot of the time, my journalistic side comes out in the podcasts that I'm doing. That sort of gets to be the what is it? What am I trying to say? That gets to be the exposure point for that part of who I am and the skills that I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a fair way of handling it, because like in today's era, very few people are just one thing, right? Like especially if you talk about like, any sort of journalistic job, you know, you used to have like you had a photographer and then you had a writer and you had a copy editor, then you had a layout person, and like now, especially in smaller publications, like it's a little bit of everything. Like and something that I do with Relay, like Mike and I both create content and deal with the advertising, which is like a huge no-no in like traditional newsrooms. So you had sales and marketing and the business office firewalled off from like the yes. content and the reporting for good reason. And I think that's still the way that newspapers and news magazines and television news should operate. But what we do, it is different. And I don't think that's good or bad. I just think it's just different. It's interesting how it's evolved. You know, we do things now that I'm sure like professors I had in journalism school would freak out about.
Yes.
And we still have those lines, right? Like, I think I could speak for both of us. Like, an advertiser does not get to say or shape our opinion on something, right? Like,
exactly.
Or if you know, say that one of our sponsors had some sort of, they were in the news for something good or bad, and it was in our coverage, like we would disclose that they had been a sponsor, but then we would talk about the story, and mm-hmm. that's what's more important to me than like the rigid rules that used to dictate everything.
I'm absolutely with you there. Like as long as I can be proud is not even necessarily the word. I guess as long as I can be internally comfortable with keeping journalist in the different bios that I have online, then I'm good. And I think that the way that especially like I'm hearing you and I handle things, and I think I've talked to Jason Snell a little bit about this in the past as well, and same thing for him in many ways. That helps us sort of, or helps me at least, feel good about, you know, claiming that title that I feel like I earned during that period of time and still try to use in all aspects of the work that I put out there.
Mm-hmm. So let's wrap up with the most important question.
Okay.
If people have been spending any amount of time following you online, they've probably seen about your two dogs. Tell us about your dogs.
Yeah, so I have two dogs, Mizzy and Henry. Mizzy, she is a Chihuahua Rat Terrier mix, and she is anxious as all get out. She was a bit of a rescue. When I first got her, and when I first adopted her, she was a dog that you would walk up to her, and she would sort of like cower and then lose control of her bladder. She was very scared of everything and everyone. And we were able, we being my other dog, Henry, who I had for about a year at that period of time, were able to sort of make her feel a little bit more, or a little less scared of everything. And so now she's like, anytime a new person comes over, she's the first one to warm up to that person. And so I love that. It's been great sort of, seeing her growth there. Henry is a full-bred Chihuahua. He is the chillest dog I know he's so chill. Like, one of the things, you know, people talk about Chihuahuas being these yappy dogs, and yes, when they bark, their barks are high pitched, and so that's definitely a factor whenever they're barking. But it is one of those things that's supposed to sort of show itself through their whole personality. And, you know, you think of these like little shaky, mean dogs, but both of them are so, so, so sweet. And Henry is just like this chill. He is more cool as a cucumber than I am, even, I think. And so I adore his sort of chill attitude. And I think that it rubs off on Mizzy a little bit, where she also is as well.
Some positive peer pressure.
Exactly. So yeah, those are my two pups. They are fantastic. And, you know, one of the things that I like, because another question I get is like, why small dogs? I sort of like the extremes. I like very, very large dogs. I just don't live in a place where I could adopt one. And then small dogs, because small dogs, you know, if you're having a moment where you just sort of want to be alone, you don't want to have the dog on top of you, you can just move the little tiny dog over. But a big dog is like, no, I think I'm just going to stay here. Thanks.
Yeah. You don't get much of a say in it.
Yes, there's no say in it. Absolutely. So that's my two pups. They're fantastic.
Awesome. Micah, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, thank you.
I sort of put you in the hot seat today.
Well, I didn't know what to expect in turn. I knew like question wise, but I didn't know where the conversation was going to go. And I'm really happy with how it's turned out.
Yeah, me too. So, thanks for joining me, listeners. Thank you for supporting Relay FM. You can always learn more about your membership at relay.fm/membership. And we'll talk to you soon.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Adios.